Hello, fellow WNYXicans. We are Lauren and Thaddeus, and we are here for the Games of Folly recap-isode.
Our recap-isodes are where we like to review all the episodes of the unit and discuss them as a unit. However, this recap-isode is not like our past recap-isodes, where we usually had a guest and had the fun of getting their input as well. No siree, this recap-isode is just two of the three OGs, breaking down the three episodes as a unit, finding our way back into some of our old categories. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. Before we dive in, it's time to quick plug our various projects and products, starting with the founder of the Stolen Dress Podcast Network, Jason Klom, and his new book, We're Not Worthy, From In Living Color to Mr. Show, How 90s Sketch TV Changed the Face of Comedy. Amazing book, definitely worth picking up and gifting to any sketch comedy fan. We also have two incredible news radio themed books from Lauren.
Yeah, so many of you already are aware that I have Sometimes a Drinking Man, which is the fake memoirs of Bill McNeil. We've talked about that book on the Hoodoo Factory podcast before. That one's been out a while. But the latest book is Jimmy James, Capitalist Lion Tamer, combined with Jimmy James, Macho Business Donkey Wrestler. It's the book so nice, I wrote it twice. And you get both editions together in one book. You can buy them all in the same place at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. Just search for Jimmy James, Capitalist Lion Tamer, or my name, Lauren Weston, and it'll come right up.
And finally, we have our Hoodoo Factory store at grabitgear.com, where you can find stickers, coasters, t-shirts, and more. And I'll let everyone in on a little inside info. The Hoodoo Factory stickers show that you're a part of such an exclusive and secret club, you will almost never see our stickers anywhere else. Join the underground movement while we still have stock to move.
The episodes in this Games of Folly unit are In Through the Outdoor, Goofy Ball, and 420. And we're going to jump right in to reviewing the episode's plots with our Plots Explained Badly and our Agent Zero, pew pew, plot synopsis.
So starting with Into the Outdoor, one of our storylines is, a man's reputation hangs on the ability of a seemingly inept opening speaker.
That is a plot. Explained badly. I've got public speaker's intro kills crowd, but crowd wants to kill public speaker.
Oh my.
I'm assuming it got real ugly.
I think so.
That's after the camera's cut.
I'm like, that's the real news story. So another plot line from this episode was, a man obsessed with gambling pushes away his friends and loses everything, including their respect.
Oh, man. This turned into a drama.
A little bit.
I've got more of a headline. I've got, reporter sets world record for largest gambling debt amassed in a single day.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's so much better. Oh, that's good. Nice. Okay, what is a more standard plot synopsis? What is our Agent Zero pew pew plot synopsis?
Okay, here's the Agent Zero version. In Through the Outdoor was season 2, episode 13. It originally aired on February 4th, 1996, which was a Sunday. Bill is set to give a speech for the Broadcasting Society. Mr. James was supposed to introduce him, but when he can't make it, he convinces Dave to fill in for him. Bill makes it his personal mission to give Dave public speaking advice in preparation for the evening. As it turns out, Dave didn't need the advice after all, and Bill is left speechless. Matthew is feeling left out when the rest of the staff discusses sports betting. He begs Joe to teach him about gambling. When Matthew ends up owing a massive gambling debt to Joe, Lisa tries to intervene, but to no avail.
So those are five accurate descriptions of the episode In Through the Outdoor. You can take your pick of which ones you like best. Okay, Goofy Ball is our next episode in the unit. Lauren, what is one of your plot lines explained badly for Goofy Ball?
I've got Miss Australia 1993's inability to operate an elevator results in a hot date for New York area news director.
Now that's a headline. Tell me more. Okay, I had, a woman has to choose between her boyfriend and her secrets when a model begins to pursue Dave.
Intrigue, yes.
Okay, what was another one of your plots explained badly?
Another one I've got is stalker, shocker, rings, shock, jocks, clock. I wasn't sure I was going to get through that one.
I didn't
one.
Think you were, as a matter of fact. I was like, I don't know where she's going, but I don't think she's going to get there. Can you say it one more time? Like, for real.
I'm going to try it. Stalker, shocker, rings, shock, jocks, clock.
Oh, man. All right, so that is now our official Hoodoo Factory tongue twister. Yeah, it's, I mean, alliteration is hard to beat no matter what. So what I have is an eccentric barista finally gets to meet his hero and have a deep discussion.
Oh,
a heartwarming story, right?
That, yeah, that turns it into a real heartwarming kind of maybe even a tearjerker.
Maybe even a tearjerker if you think about it from the right perspective. All right, what is our Agent Zero plot synopsis?
Goofyball was season 2, episode 2. It originally aired on September 26th, 1995, which was a Tuesday. Mr. James asked the staff in the office to test out the Goofyball, a toy manufactured by a company he recently acquired. The toy serves as a distraction for Beth and Matthew, who seem to never grow tired of it, and an annoyance for Dave, who is sick of hearing the guh sound it makes, and an excuse for Mr. James to hang around the station. A group of fashion models sporadically appear in the elevator of the Criterion building on their way to a catalog photo shoot on another floor. Joe wants to set Dave up on a date with one of them. Dave finds himself unable to give Joe a convincing reason why he can't go on a date without revealing his secret office romance with Lisa. Bill believes he has a stalker. He thinks he's seen someone with an eye patch following him and acting suspicious. No one takes Bill's suspicions seriously, causing him to take matters into his own hands. He acquires a stun gun, dubbed the Stalker Shocker, from Joe in order to protect himself. Unfortunately for Bill, he inadvertently shocks himself, rendering himself helpless when the would-be stalker actually appears.
Okay. Once again, 5 very accurate descriptions of what happens in the episode Goofy Ball. Okay, so our final episode is 420. Final episode in this unit is 420. And I'm going to start off with, a best friend goes to incredible lengths to support a man whose ex-girlfriend appears to be moving on. Very sentimental. I'm in a sentimental mood, apparently.
Very noble intentions you're implying that Bill has there.
Are you implying he does not? First argument of the podcast.
I went a different way with it.
Okay.
I said, a local news reporter accused of slander after misrepresenting secretly recorded phone conversations.
You just love the after story.
I love the after story.
I like The Bachelor when they get together, and you love hearing about them when they break apart at the end. Oh, I saw that coming.
Called it.
Okay. I'm not going to argue that maybe your description's a little more interesting, but but oh boy, they could go badly. All right. So another plot line that I had was, a shy intern turns to an older woman in hopes of romance and upending the male office hierarchy.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
Like, right? It would put him on Dave's level if he, yeah, so.
I support it. I'm in favor. Yeah.
All right.
Down with the patriarchy.
Yes, Lauren, down with the patriarchy.
I've got, eccentric billionaire hosts an ultimate tickle fight to the death, impressing no one. I just don't think it went off the way he wanted it.
It's the accuracy that I'm laughing at. Like that's exactly what happens. Nice. Very well done. Very well done. Okay, what's the Agent Zero plot synopsis?
420, as the episode title suggests, was season 4, episode 20. It originally aired on April 29th, 1998, which was a Wednesday. Mr. James invites the staff to his smoker, which turns out to be an ultimate fighting competition between Joe and Matthew. Upon learning that his opponent will be Matthew, Joe has some reservations about the fight because he assumes he will gravely injure his friend. Matthew, on the other hand, is extremely confident that he will win the fight and eggs Joe on throughout the day. Walt invites Lisa to attend the smoker as his date, causing Bill to speculate about the status of their relationship. Bill attempts to gather more information about Lisa's intentions with Walt by secretly recording phone calls with her and playing them back to Dave against Dave's will. Dave has discovered that the easiest way to get Matthew to leave him alone is to pretend to be crazy. This information gets passed around the office, eventually making its way back to Matthew himself. Matthew doesn't understand that the tactic was originally meant for him, but is able to utilize it somewhat effectively nonetheless.
Five accurate descriptions of what happens in the episode 420. And that is our Games of Folly unit, In Through the Outdoor, Goofy Ball, and 420. We're going to move into our Abs of Fever categories, and what we decided to do for this recap episode is go through some of our regular categories, the ones that we used to do on our original show, and have them applied to the entire unit. So there's no expectation that each individual episode will be in each answer or even mentioned or referred to. We're just going to go through and looking at as a unit, what are some of our answers to our regular categories, starting with what scene would you show to a new person? So Lauren, of this unit, what scene would you show to a new person?
Out of the whole unit, my first choice scene out of all three episodes would be the blue shirt scene from Goofy Ball.
Okay.
This is such a classic news radio scene. I think it perfectly exemplifies the various, like, the specific neuroses of both Dave and Lisa, because I think they are both very neurotic people, but in very different ways. And I also think that Dave, there's a possibility he might be totally screwing with Lisa for his own enjoyment in this scene. And I think it would be really interesting to see if a new person would pick up on that subtle layer.
Oh, that's awesome. That's what I wish I had thought of, that he was just messing with her. Because I assume he's being straight. I assume he sees them as different shades.
He might be, but I've always wondered, like, is he just messing with her? Because we do find out later that, like, he loves it when she's mad.
That's true. That is very true. And that's just a nice, easy little thing to, like, to kind of poke her with. So that is also on my list. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a great gag with, was it seven shades of blue shirts?
Yeah, I think we get seven, yeah.
Too good. Okay, so you didn't take my number one. Yes. Which is actually Dave and Bill in Dave's office preparing for the speech. It's the one with Bill with his feet up on the desk, which evolves into him with the umbrella slamming it down on the table as he's trying to reinforce his point. I think anybody who comes in and watches that scene, like, right away, just you get the full Bill McNeil, Phil Hartman special right there.
That one was definitely on my list. Yes. Yeah, that was a great one. It's the dynamic between the two of them. It's anytime Bill gets to use a prop like that, you know he's going to make a meal of it, you know? And that's the one with the ladies and gentlemen, right? Yeah.
Ba-ba-ba.
Yeah.
Oh, ba-ba-ba-ba.
Yeah. So good.
Ladies, these men are gentle.
That was a great scene, definitely on my list. And I do think a new person would get a lot out of that because there's just so much, like, there's physical comedy going on. Yeah, there's the Bill-Dave dynamic.
And we end in the bird call.
Yeah, the bird call's in there too, that's right. So good.
Yeah, right away, you even get some noises to imitate out of that scene.
Oh, yeah. That would be a good one, too. That's an excellent choice.
Maybe that's what I should use as transitions between the segments, is Bill doing the bird call.
Quick, quick, coo.
That was awesome. All right. Okay, what's the next scene that you would show to a new person?
I like the scene at the end of 420 where we get the phone call between Dave and Lisa, and then the phone call between Dave and Bill, and then the reveal that Bill is actually in Dave's apartment. Yeah. I think it's just like surprise after surprise. So like for, I mean, if you've seen it a million times, the surprise factor is gone. But I think for a new person, you're not expecting the phone call with Bill to come right after the phone call with Lisa. Right. So that would be a surprise. And then you're definitely not expecting Bill to walk out of Dave's bathroom. and it also includes one of those great, like the pre-recorded phone calls that Bill's been utilizing throughout the whole episode. And it does incorporate more characters and stuff like that. And always fun to see a scene somewhere outside of the office. So then we've got this scene happening in Dave's apartment. Right. So for all those reasons, I think this would be a really great scene to show to a new person and just get to live vicariously through their surprise factor. Because we don't get that surprise factor anymore.
Right. No, but you're right. Yeah, it is very unexpected. All of those things are very unexpected. Yeah, up until what, Bill getting into bed with Dave at the end? Not on your life, pal. I'm here for you.
Wouldn't you be more comfortable on the couch?
Yeah, trying to get Dave out of his own bed. Oh, man. That's a good point. Like, right, we've seen it so many times that it doesn't hit the same way of just like, it just keeps on taking that next step.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, that's a strong one. Then for my second scene that I would show to a new person, I'm going to go with 420, the smoker opening scene at the meeting table, going with the fight introduction. So right away, okay. we have Walt trying to explain what smoker is. We have Bill trying to explain what the smoker is. You know, like, we have those jokes. Then all of a sudden, we get Joe coming in, sloppy, looking sloppy, but in the robe, yeah. You know, and he's going to fight somebody. We're like, okay, Joe's going to fight somebody. And then we get the reveal that he's going to fight Matthew. And right away, you know, everybody's reaction to finding out, including Joe's, when he finds out he's going to be fighting Matthew. So that scene, I think, for a new person would give a real good idea of what the comedy would be and also get those spikes, you know, as unexpected things happen.
Yeah, the comedy just builds in that scene really nicely. Like, you're right. Like the little jokes at the beginning where nobody understands what the smoker is. Yeah. And then building to, like, you're setting up the whole plot of what this episode's going to be.
It's boxing, though. We have the octagon of horror. You know? Two man enter, one man leaves. Yeah. Awesome. Sorry. So what are some honorable mentions that you had on your list? What are some other scenes you think we should consider?
I did like the guess which hand the pencil's in scene from In Through the Outdoor. I think that was a good scene because, you know, even a new person would be at that point just all in on Joe just destroying Matthew in this gambling storyline. Yeah. Like, if you didn't know Matthew, you might start to feel some sympathy for him. Right. Like, come on, let this guy win. And then you see that and you're just like, no, okay, just let him have it. He's clearly an idiot. Just no, he doesn't deserve the sympathy.
For just that, like, was like Mr. James at the end of the episode when he tells him, he's like, "You don't say."
You don't say.
Okay, we're done here.
Yeah, so that was one of my honorable mentions.
Nice. I think the next one that I had up was actually gonna be Bill telling Dave and Catherine about the stalker. Because he comes in with the Yankees hat and the dark glasses and he's got his shoulders kind of hunched up like he's looking over his shoulder. You know, Dave gives the, who are you and what have you done with Bill? And, you know, and then they just play it all the way out. Catherine is making fun of him by the end of the scene. You know, so I think that's actually a good scene to show a new person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, the costume really makes it. Yeah. That really sells it. And the way Catherine just doesn't leave the room, like, you know, she comes in to let Dave know what's going on, and then she's like, "I'm gonna stick around for this show."
Sits down to the show, absolutely. Makes fun of him on the way in. Makes fun of him on the way out.
Yeah, you can use me as a human shield.
I wish I could laugh at that. I really do. Yeah. What's another one on your list? What's another one you wanted to mention?
I like the scene in Goofy Ball where Joe gives Bill the stalker shocker. mostly because it features not one but two Joe inventions. I always love to see what, like, a new person would make of these Joe inventions. But, like, obviously we've got the stalker shocker, which like, we can see it. We can see how janky it looks. But then also Bill describing it, it looks like a garage door opener. It's labeled with magic marker. But then we've also got the tiny megaphone into which Joe shouts, "Red Sox suck." Yep.
I love the laugh he gives after he says it, too. Yeah,
he's so proud of himself.
Oh, that's good.
So that scene mostly for the inventions.
Oh, that's a good pick.
I really like that.
That's a good pick. All right, I've got one more, and it's going to be Dave and Lisa telling Mr. James that they're having the affair.
Mm. Oh, that's a good one.
We've been through the Wayback Machine a couple times.
Yeah.
Which one are we going to have to fire? And, you know, then the free long distance. Will you actually pay for that? It's your company. Don't mess with the man with the Wayback Machine, Dave. I can make it so you were never born.
God, the look on his face. Like, he is serious. Like, he's really going to make it so you were never born.
Does he really have a Wayback Machine? Like, is that intense? And obviously, you know, again, there's a couple great quotes. We're getting to quotes next, but there's a couple of the great quote in that scene that I like to throw around. So that's what I think a new person would really enjoy.
That's a good one. That one probably should have been on my list. That's a great scene.
I like that Lisa clamps on his leg. Dave's about to get up and go. She clamps down.
he freezes.
Yeah. She tells Jimmy, what? They have a little mini argument right in front of him. Hold on, it's coming.
That was great.
Great. All right, did you have one more?
I have one more. It's the scene where Bill plays Dave the tape of his phone call with Lisa the first time. Yeah. Okay. It's just so over the top obvious that the tape proves nothing. And yet Bill marched into Dave's office to play it anyway. Oh. You know, like he had to have known from the start it proved nothing. And he went ahead anyway. Don't want to get too much into quotes, but it also gives us a really fantastic Bill line. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But I love the way at this point in the series, Dave has accepted that it's easier to just entertain Bill's insanity than to challenge it. Like, I think season one, Dave would have been like, Bill, this obviously proves nothing, and you can't go around recording people without their knowledge. And instead, he's just like, in the next scene, you know, he's like, you better have some tape recorded evidence to back that up, you know? Like, he's just going along with it.
Yeah. That's a great point, though. I never thought about how that relationship kind of changed or altered, but...
Yeah. Oh, Dave figured out how to make his life easier.
And I have to call attention to it. Bill's face, when he's playing that tape... You know, like, what's coming out is so incriminating and shocking. Like, just the expressions that he's making as he's playing the tape for Dave are just absolutely priceless. Like, fantastic.
Even little things as he's fast-forwarding. His face is doing so much. Like, there's nothing to react to other than the sound of the tape fast-forwarding, and yet all this acting is happening on his face. It's really great.
I agree. Great scene. Great for a new person. Great for anybody. Great for old fans, new fans.
Everybody. Definitely.
Awesome. So we're going to move into our next category, which is usable quotes. Quotes that you would most want to use in real life. So, Lauren, what's your number one quote that you'd like to use in real life?
You're going to find this surprising. I alluded to it in the last section. Are you challenging my constitutional right to make nude phone calls? But I want to say I would paraphrase this and I would replace the make nude phone calls part.
Yeah.
So like with whatever the conversation called for. For example, are you challenging my constitutional right to compulsively watch the same sitcom from the 90s over and over and over again? I just like the idea that it's got to be something that the Constitution never, ever would have addressed, you know?
I think a little bit smaller. Like, I'm like, are you challenging my constitutional right to eat gummy worms? You know, like, just anything tiny, maybe that's the way to go, you know? Yeah, that's a great line. I think it's definitely can use it in a bunch of situations, as long as you swap out your activity. Okay, so my usable quote is actually very, very ridiculous, but it is when Bill is yelling at Dave and he goes, "No, you settle down, you settle down." As stupid as it is, that's the one that I imagine actually using in real life. It's just like somebody's like, settle down. Oh, you settle down. You settle down. Like, and he's so over the top in the episode. Like, obviously, I wouldn't be, you know, that excitable, hopefully, when I was saying that. I'd be saying it with a smile on my face. But I love when he does it in the episode. And I love how quickly it rolls off the tongue if you find yourself in a situation where someone's telling you to calm down or to wait or something like that. You know, using it out of context, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, you know I love that kind of stuff.
You do. Okay, what's your next usable quote?
You mentioned it previously. Let's step in the old Wayback Machine, travel back in time about 30 seconds. From Goofy Ball.
That is so usable. Oh, man, that's so usable.
I truly use this all the time. Oh. And first of all, anytime you're talking about a time machine, always call it a Wayback Machine because it's nice. Way funnier.
Nice.
And as far as the 30 seconds, I mean, you can modify that for however long the current situation calls for. But, like, the shorter the amount of time, the funnier the quote is. That's like true. I think the 30 seconds is what makes it hilarious.
I think if you can use it anywhere, like, it's not really disrespectful. You'd be like, why don't we jump in the Wayback Machine and go back 30 seconds? And you think about if that's what you really wanted to say right there. You know, like, perfect, assertive, yet not necessarily challenging. That's
well,
a good
and
one.
Like, people sometimes will come to you asking a question and not even realize they already had the answer. So that's a great situation. Like, let's go step in the old Wayback Machine, go back about 30 seconds. What was the first thing you said when you came in here? That was the answer.
Nice. I like that. Super usable. Super usable.
Yeah. Very usable.
Okay. I'm going to go with this in my second. I mean, nobody cares how beautiful the souffle is if the appetizer is turds in a blanket.
That was the next one on my list. Oh my God. So good.
It's so usable all the time. Like, anything where you're afraid that someone's going to set you up poorly or things aren't going to go well before you get there, like, bam, beautiful line. Turds in a blanket.
And it catches people's attention. That's for sure.
It's true.
People are like, oh, okay. I guess we better rethink this.
I love how menacing. He says it like a little bit of menace in his voice. Oh, man. Like, I definitely think you could use that in a lot of situations. A lot of places. Okay, so I think it's a strong four right there from the unit. What are some of your honorable mentions? I know I only have one or two.
I've got a few. One of my honorable mentions is clean desk for a clean boss. I mostly think it's ridiculous, but I haven't used it, but I want to use it in a couple ways. I want to use this one about myself because I think it's meaningless and confusing. Mm. I keep a very clean desk at work, and I am a boss, so, like, what does it mean to be a clean boss? Like, nobody would know. But then I also want to use it about my boss because her desk is so messy. I don't think anyone's ever actually seen the surface of it. So I want to use it, like, sarcastically because it would, like, somehow imply that she's an unclean boss. And then what does that mean? Like, both ways, it's confusing, it's meaningless, and hilarious.
Would you ever consider going to her desk and actually straightening it up?
I think she would stop me. I think she would be like, you're going to lose something. Because I've made the joke with her before that it's her filing system. You have a perfect mm-hmm. horizontal access system here. Everything is at your fingertips. And she's like, yes, you've got it. That's it.
Chaotic organization. Absolutely.
Yeah. She can find stuff. When I'm like, hey, where's that one report? She's like, ah, it's right here. And she'll lift up like four little things. And there it is. She knows where stuff is.
Whenever I clean up, I can't find anything. It's just like, see? I don't know where it is. I'm in her corner a little bit. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to mess with her system, but I know I couldn't live like that.
One of my honorable mentions is you can't expect the troops to salute you if you're sleeping with the sergeant.
I knew you were going to bring that one up. When I heard it wasn't on my list, but I was like, when I heard that one, I was like, Thad's going to say that one.
100%. 100%. Again, I love any Jimmyism because, again, mm-hmm. it sounds like it should make sense. And then when you think about it, you're like, well, what? No. So I think that's a good way, because you get to use it in a reproachful way. You know, you're telling somebody that they messed up. You're like, you know what, man? You got to think about it, because you can't expect the troops to salute you if you're sleeping with the sergeant. That's what you almost want to have somebody say to you so you can react to it. More than necessarily even say it to somebody else. Like, picture your boss saying that to you. Like, what? Who? What? Sergeant?
It makes you understand Dave's reaction.
Like, it does.
He just really wanted to know, what branch of the service were you in?
Oh, man. All right. So that was one of my honorable mentions. Do you have any more?
I've got two more.
Okay, I've got one more
that I think are super usable. One is, who's your buddy? Who's your pal?
Okay, perfect.
I get uncomfortable if I've done something nice for someone and they try to like thank me too much for it. Mm-hmm. If it's like a real quick, like, oh, hey, thanks, I'm fine with that. But if they're like, oh, thank you so much, and they're just like, and it, I feel like it's too much, yeah. I get uncomfortable. Yeah. And I think this is a good way to deflect that. If I'm just like, who's your buddy? Who's your pal? It gives me like an out. I'm like, okay, now go away. It's fine. It was no big deal. Leave me alone.
Yeah, you might have to get a hug in there, but otherwise, I agree. That works. go enjoy it. And if you're not quite sure, you say Buttafuoco to you too, and let them go. Well,
and then they'll really be like, okay, that falls in line with the acting crazy, so they leave you alone.
Ah, you're right. You're right. That's the turn that we're taking right now. Even better than the quotes is, how many of these bits would you perform in real life? And that's got to be the number one. Yeah. I think that's got to be number one in the series.
I'm not taking it as far as Matthew, though.
Fair. All right. So I only had one more quote that I want to mention, and I can't say that it's super usable, but I'm really trying to figure it out. And it comes from when Joe is telling Matthew that he loves him and nothing's going to happen. And Matthew says, that's sweet, but no sex before the fight, all right, little lady? Like, that's how I want to respond to compliments. If someone gave me a compliment when I'm about to go do something else, like, you know, the timing has to work and the tone has to work. But that scene absolutely cracks me up, and that line just, like, right away.
I think if you start using that quote in real life, you run the risk of somebody asking you, have you ever been bitch slapped?
yeah, I have. Okay, so yeah, I think we're gonna have to start putting like a disclaimer on these quotes, like use at your own peril.
But please share the story with us, because we want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know what happened. Reactions may vary. Right. Okay, we're going to move on to our next category, which is the most impactful gag or bit. This is kind of a tougher one, because I think using the entire unit, using all three episodes instead of just one, it was difficult, I think, to pick. So, Lauren, what was your most impactful gag or bit of the episode, of the unit?
I think the biggest impact for me was Bill with the tape-recorded conversations, that whole gag. Because from the very first one, it's clear that the tapes prove nothing, which, I mean, already that's a great gag. But it's obvious that he manipulated the conversation to try to prove a point that isn't there. It's unclear if he thinks he's proving the point to Dave, or if he just thinks Dave is dumb enough to believe whatever idiotic ploy, like, Bill is trying to pull.
Right.
And the way he just keeps busting out tape after tape, in spite of the fact that they don't prove anything, it just makes the whole episode for me.
Yeah.
And I felt like also as a unit, like the Dave Bill relationship was probably the strongest thread of the unit.
I agree. Yeah.
So I felt like overall in the unit, maybe that gag had the biggest impact.
All right. I have that on my list. That's in my top answers as well. And I like how you point out the tapes actually get worse too. You know, the whole thing gets more ridiculous. What he records and what's on those tapes gets more and more ridiculous as you go along. So that's a great answer for most impactful gag or bit. My section is going to be acting crazy to make somebody go away. And I think partially because it is probably like the most feasible of all the bits you see on this show that you might want to try to implement in real life. On the last episode, I had a poll of like, how many people thought about doing this in response to somebody to try to get them to go away? You know, 60% said, yeah, 40% people lied. So right away, I knew that this is the gag that made such a big impact. But no, I think, you know, we see Jimmy does kind of the baseball signs. That's the one that people actually like the best. The animal noises that Dave does, Lisa's imaginary friend, and then Matthew goes big right away and just goes right, bam, let's get naked. And I have to point out, nobody seems to really react very strongly to Matthew getting so naked, so...
They're used to it at this point. Kind of. They're like, oh, look. There's another episode where they're like, oh, look, Matthew's naked in the office exactly. again. I think this is part of that
exactly.
running bit, probably.
Okay. What's another impactful gag or bit that you had on your list?
The shrieking with the goofy ball.
Nice.
I'll admit that the goofy ball storyline itself, to me, it wasn't like my favorite, or I didn't think it was the most impactful, but we get the bits with Dave finding all the gameplay and the screaming distracted.
Yeah.
And then we get the gag where Dave thinks Beth is shrieking over the goofy ball, but it's actually Matthew. Yeah. But the big impact is the payoff at the end where Lisa and Dave think they've heard someone screaming over the goofy ball, when in fact, what they actually heard was Bill stalker shockering himself into temporary paralysis, and it links the storylines together. Yes. Like, that was the link. So for me, that made it have a bigger impact.
I 100% agree. That was actually my number three. So we hit my top three with all of our answers.
Okay.
So I have another one, but yeah, no, that's you don't expect it to have a really big impact, and you're like, oh, you get a couple gags to the episode. You're like, oh, that's a good way to use it. And then bam, that payoff at the end of Bill shocking himself, they're like, that damn goofy ball. Yeah, to me, you know, it's like, that's comedic genius. That's what good writing looks like.
Yeah.
All right, so one I will mention is a replacement with number four is actually just the Matthew losing at gambling bit, which, again, that might be too strong. It's almost like a storyline, but like just the way he loses, from rock, paper, scissors to the radio to throwing papers to a pencil in the hand. Like, it's not just that he's losing. It's the way he's losing that makes it extra, extra funny. And obviously, that's a huge part of that episode. So if it's small enough, it counts to me as a bit. But if someone says, nah, that's too big, that's a plot line, I get that too.
It's almost like he's losing at little kid bets, you know, like, like these are little kid bets. This is how like an older sibling would trick a toddler into losing a bet.
Kind of, yeah.
Which hand is the pencil in?
With Lisa monitoring. good. Okay. Did you have any more impactful gags or bits you want to mention?
I do. The gag at the end of, In Through the Outdoor, where Dave actually proves to be a fantastic public speaker, only to reveal that Bill has completely lost his voice.
Yeah.
To me, that was the perfect, like, absurdist cap to all the back and forth that the two of them had throughout the day during that episode.
Perfect payoff.
Yeah. And again, I felt like through this whole unit, like, the Dave-Bill relationship was, like, the strongest thread. So, like, that relationship was like the most impactful thing in the unit, and then this was just like that cap on that storyline that, like, yeah, big impact for me.
nice. Yeah, it's a good way to cap off that episode. That's actually one of the stronger closers, I think, all the way around.
Yeah.
Dave sipping his tea, looking very satisfied with himself. Like, good way to go. All right, I'm just going to mention one more, and it's Matthew being aggressive towards Joe before their fight. That is just, it's so funny to me. You know, again, it's like Joe is just trying to, like, just like, oh, man, here we go. And Matthew is just all out super aggressive. It just makes me laugh. That's one of the funniest gags bits in the entire unit to me. So I don't know if anyone else will agree, but I thought I had to mention it because it's strong.
Yeah, Joe is, like, finally trying to be nice to him for a change, and Matthew's just, like, posturing and stuff, like, can't accept it.
That's sweet. You're going down. Okay, so yes, that was an impactful gagger bit. Did you have any more that you wanted to mention?
Just the blue shirt bit. Mostly because I feel like it's such a memorable one. Like, absolutely. I feel like every news radio fan remembers this gag in detail, even if they can't remember what episode it's from. Yeah. They know that gag. It was a key element of one of the very few arcs that they had in this show. They stayed away from arcs, but the Dave Lisa relationship was one arc that they had. And it was impactful to the episode because it illustrated the secrecy of their relationship, which Lisa sort of disintegrated at the end with Mr. James.
That's true.
Because that's true. It just became right.
It starts off, right. Super secret, and then... No.
Blew it all up. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty impactful.
All right. That's a great point. I would actually say that's probably a top 10 scene/gag for news radio fans. You know, because you're right.
Everyone remembers it.
Everybody knows the blue shirt gag or the scene or whatever else. So that's a great point. It definitely should have been on my list somewhere. Awesome. All right. We're going to move on to our next category, which is the adequate touch. So some of the adequate touches from the unit and, basically what we thought was worth mentioning from the unit. There's so many. I think this was really tough for me because there's so many choices and it's so minute. But I got a solid three. Lauren, what's one of the adequate touches you want to mention?
I wanted to mention in Goofy Ball, Bill testing out the stalker shocker, trying to see if it actually works. In particular, trying to zap the paper cup and trying to zap the little plant on his desk. It's the things he tries it on and the way he braces himself in preparation for the zap that never comes. And how would he know if the cup was incapacitated? What's it going to do? Move less? And the plant, I don't know, maybe he was expecting it was going to set on fire or something, but I'm what was that going to prove?
Yeah.
Anyway, all of it was a nice adequate touch, I thought.
I have to agree. So his face, I'm actually going to follow up on that. His face in all of the episodes actually is something that I put as an adequate touch, because the stun gun scene was just mentioned. The phone call, which we mentioned earlier when he's playing the tape for Dave of the phone call. And then when he's listening to Dave's speech in the office as he listens to him practice, and you see him hanging on the words. So no! They think you forgot my name!
You're too late!
Yeah, so I kind of put that in as the adequate touch of in each episode, there was a part where his face was actually doing a lot of the comedic work right there and needed to be called out. So... Boo-boo! Same page. All right, what's your second adequate touch that you picked up on?
From 420, Dave drinking coffee in bed. I think Dave's coffee addiction is so embedded in the show that I almost don't register the fact that he has a mug in his hand while he's in bed on the phone with Lisa and then Bill. And I will admit, I'm making an assumption about what's in the mug. Fair. But I'd like to think that the viewers are supposed to believe that Dave drinks coffee in bed as he's trying to fall asleep.
I agree. I think it's one of those things that I was like, huh? I was like, oh yeah, no, that's just Dave drinking coffee. You just skip right past it. You're like, no, that is normal. That's Dave.
If it was tea, you'd see the tea bag hanging something, out of the right. cup, right? There's no sleepy time tea in Dave's bedtime routine. I'm pretty sure that was a cup of coffee.
I think so. Just watching some TV, just sipping some coffee. That's exactly what I thought was. Nice. All right. My next adequate touch is the person when Bill gets up at the end of the episode to do the speech and his voice is hoarse and he can't quite make it up. Some of the crowd goes, speak up! I absolutely start dying every time I hear it. To have his own advice get thrown right back in his face and he can't do it. Oh man. It's just that you just hear the voice pop up out of nowhere and I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. That was perfect. Okay.
That was really good.
All right, your second adequate touch? Or third, right? Do you have an honorable mention? I'm sorry.
Yeah. In Goofy Ball, when Joe is trying to sell Dave on the idea of going on a date with the model and Lisa's sitting there listening to it, she does a great job of reacting like she's trying not to react. Like yeah. she does the spinning of the chair and the aggressive Snap. Straightening of the newspaper. It's all really fantastic. It's like any normal person watching would know that she is pissed, but because all these characters are like oblivious and living in their own worlds, they're just like, oh yeah, that's just Lisa, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know, it seems like, I don't know, if I was those other characters, I would notice that she was pissed. Like, I'm just like, oh, Lisa's reading the paper, like whatever, like maybe she's mad about something, but I would never make the connection. But I love when yeah. she gives the thumbs up. He's like, Lisa, and she like gives this weird thumbs up. Oh yeah, go ahead, Dave. Like,
go get him.
Yeah. But you're right. Like, she doesn't, again, she doesn't really say anything, but you focus on her and what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does a good job of that.
All the body language is just like anger and aggression, but the words are like, yep, go get him.
The spin of the paper snaps and it's just perfect. Like,
yeah, that was a nice touch.
All right, so I have one adequate touch honorable mention, and it's actually in 420 when they're at the smoker. Lisa is on the phone and she goes, "Don't cry, Bill." And there's something about the idea of Bill crying on the phone. And then I'm just like, wow, like three words and like, bam, that's the whole joke. He comes back to the table all kind of stuffy and puts his phone away. But the idea that Bill is crying over this situation is just hilarious to me. Like, it's this little line that I almost feel like goes unnoticed all the time. But
that's a good point. It's like it really is like a throwaway line.
Kind of.
Why is he so invested in this?
And he's like, he hangs up and snaps the phone shut, you know, the attitude. Yeah. I'm like, that's nice. That's a nice touch. All right. Did you have any more that you wanted to mention?
I've got one more. Okay. And in Through the Outdoor, when Dave is explaining to Jimmy that Melissa Etheridge is a gay lesbian type woman, and he mentions that she's right up there with Katie Lang, I think it's a nice added touch of Jimmy first reacting as if it's some big joke that Dave's saying, yeah. and then suddenly realizing like, oh, he's serious. And then crossing another name off the list. Like, he never actually says right. Katie Lang was on the list, but now we can gather as much that she was, and now he's just found out that she is also a gay lesbian type woman.
Nice. Yeah, that is a nice touch, the whole pencil and crossing it off right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes from high to low. Nice. All right, we're going to move on to our keepsakes category. And this one's a little bit strange because we, for the last two episodes, put out a survey where people were allowed to vote on some of the keepsakes. So for Goofy Ball and for 420, we have kind of winners established. And Lauren and I are going to talk about some other options. And then we're going to talk about In Through the Outdoor and what are some items from that particular episode. So the Goofy Ball and Bill's audio tape of his calls with Lisa were the two selections for those two episodes by the people through the survey. And we were going to talk about some of the other items that we might take from those episodes. All right, Lauren, what is a keepsake? What's something that you would put in the news radio nook?
I mean, I think the the people got it right. I think the Goofy Ball is the number one item, yeah. right? Yeah. I feel like it's such a recognizable prop from the whole series, not even just this unit, but from the whole series. And especially, could you imagine if you could rig it to say "guh"?
Well, you'd have to have it on like a pedestal, and people walk in and be like the first thing that they see, and you have to have a little button for them to push, and that way the button goes. Yeah.
I don't know if I want it to say the original like "guh" sound that the ball said, or if I want it to be a recording of Beth imitating the "guh" sound, because hers was also very good. Maybe you have two buttons, one for each.
Sounds like a two button job to me.
Yeah. But that would look really great in the memorabilia collection. Sure. I'm guessing that was first on your list.
That was absolutely first on my list.
Okay.
Yeah. No doubt at all.
The people have spoken.
The people have voted, even better.
The people have voted, yes.
So what was another item from that episode other than the Goofy Ball that you would have put in the keepsake category?
The Stalker Shocker.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Has to be.
I mean, anytime there's a Joe invention, I want it. Even if it really was just a modified garage door opener, I would still want it in my collection to display in all its glory, you know, magic marker and all.
Yep.
However, no houseplants would be harmed on my watch.
I love the fact that you put it out and people are like, what is this, a garage door opener? And you're like, try it. Maybe. But yeah, I think it's something that would look great in like a trophy room. Like no matter how you mm-hmm. put it or something like that, it's so interesting to look at right away.
Yeah.
I think it's a good call. I have, all right, so that was mine from that episode. So from the 420 episode, I actually like Joe and Matthew's robes. The boxing mm-hmm. robes. Because I think obviously yeah. you can wear them. I think you could hang them up on the wall with the names mm-hmm. on the back, whatever. You know, and yeah. that adds a little flair to the room, or frame them or something like that. So that would be probably my second pick for that episode, or a second string keepsake for us.
I was shocked when Joe came out in that robe yeah. with Gorelli on the back yeah. that we did not get a Your Name's Gorelli joke.
That would have been
perfect. I could not believe
right.
it.
Right.
And he introduced him as Joe the Gorilla Gorelli.
Oh, man.
Not one person. Your last name's Gorelli? Not one.
Perfect for Bill. Perfect setup for Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't believe it didn't happen.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah.
But, yeah, the robes were on my list, too.
Nice.
Even Matthew's looking gigantic. Still looked nice and cozy. You can roll up the sleeves, you know? And think about how tall he is. That's think true. About how tall Andy Dick is. And he was still swimming in that thing.
Yeah, they really had to, they had to find a real big robe over his face. He can't see. Yeah. Nice. Nice. All right, what was an item that you would grab from that episode? Or are the robes your answer as well?
Well, the robes were on my list, okay. but I also had Walt's feather duster on there, which I'm assuming he stole from Milos's cart. I don't know where else he would have got
it. I never thought about where it came from. I never, I don't know if I've ever seen a feather duster in real life, and it never occurred to me, where would Walt get a feather duster?
That's my question. Like, where do you even buy a feather duster like that anymore? I think the Swiffer people put the feather duster people out of business. I don't even know if you can buy one of those.
Right. That was fancy. Like,
yeah. He, like, it, like, retracts into the handle. Oh, like, at the end, when he's leaving Dave's office, he, like, pulls it in and all the feathers go into the handle. I was like, what? Like, where do I get me one of those?
That's not on any office supply order for him that I've ever seen.
No. And if I had that keepsake, then I could use it for my clean desk for clean boss prank that I'm going to play on my boss.
That's true. I mean, that's really kind of vital when you think about it. Because the feather duster, yeah. it adds another layer of confusion.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good plan. Okay, do you have any more? I've got one more that I wanted to mention as a weird one, really.
No, that's all I've got.
All right, so I just wanted to mention Dennis Miller's eye patch, the Stalker's eye patch, which okay. is so weird, but at the same time, if you saw a head with an eye patch on it when you walked into a little trophy room, yeah. like, you would immediately be like, okay, what's this about? That's super interesting. It's either that or maybe the signed picture of Bill McNeil. That might have been good, but I think I like the eye patch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention that as one. Now, for In Through the Outdoor, that episode was a lot tougher to kind of find like a unanimous type of item, and we didn't do a survey. So what was a keepsake from that episode that you thought would be good to add to the cave?
So, yeah, I didn't come up with a lot of real solid things that I thought of, but I did think of the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
That Bill uses much in the same way he wielded the cane exactly. in the cane episode. Yep. I think that's what made me want it, is that he's using sort of the same mannerisms as he's tapping it on the desk yes. to get the cadence right for the ladies and gentlemen part. And he's swinging it around and he's pointing and gesturing with it. So I did like the umbrella. I think it was Dave's umbrella, though, because I think it was hanging on the little coat rack thing in Dave's office in an earlier scene.
I'm going to have to go back
and then
and
it
look.
Wasn't hanging on the rack during that scene. So I think he kind of stole Dave's umbrella,
which
maybe
better.
Makes me want it even more.
Exactly.
It's a pilfered item.
That's a good choice. The umbrella is also on my list.
Okay.
I decided, I think I would probably go with the newspaper with the horse racing form from 1993.
Okay.
That Matthew tries to use. You know, like,
all right.
I think that might be, you know, because again, you'd have to put it somewhere and you would see the horses' names with the date probably in the top corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's the same paper that has the super fights bout Foreman and Ali.
Zaire, continent. Think hot, think muggy.
So that's what I would probably go with is my keepsake. And I've only got one other one that I could even think of. So
me too. I'm curious if it's the same one.
Copy of Dave's speech.
Oh, okay. No, that's a good one.
Okay.
I wonder if we could get like a whole speech. Like I've, you know, because obviously he didn't perform it.
No,
but
right.
He had all those cards,
right?
I wonder what was on there.
Even I tell you what, I'll even take a copy of the bad speech that he gives to Milos and Catherine and Beth. Like, what speech can be so bad that they reacted that way? I want to see it.
I will be proud to have you as my president.
Duty. Okay, what was your other item that you might consider?
So the only other thing I could think of was the pencil.
Oh.
the specific pencil, but I would want to display it. I would want to get like mannequin hands and display it like one empty mannequin hand and one with the pencil in it and ask people to guess which hand the pencil's in.
Oh, that would be hilarious. Because with that loss, if I remember correctly, Matthew was like $20,000 in debt when he gets
that
wrong.
Yeah.
So like, that's like a $20,000 pencil, the way I see it, as far as it's some sort of trophy goes. Like, but that two hands, one with him, one, that was perfect. Oh, man. Sooner or later, we're going to have to get somebody to do like a virtual trophy room for us with all the things that we picked on the show and like and just kind of hang
good.
Stuff in virtually so we could imagine how it would look.
That would be really good.
Somebody with more skills than me.
Walk around in VR so you can actually see everything. Yeah,
this is what we do with our time. We're going to design a news radio VR trophy room. So for time purposes, we're going to end part A of the recap episode right here. We hope you've enjoyed it, and please join us in part B for the rest of this conversation and episode. Catch you guys on the flip-flop.
Thank you for visiting the Hoodoo Factory, the source for all your hoodoo needs. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @hoodoo_factory. The Hoodoo Factory is part of the Stolen Dress Podcast Network. Please stop by our gift shop at grabitgear.com. And remember, the Hoodoo Factory is the supplier of the only known antidote for Absa fever.